Good evening, everybody. I'm Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
And my sobriety date is October the 19th, 1982. Good to be here tonight. Good turnout. I appreciate what David had to say. I appreciate you asking me to come and share with you my experience with the steps. Anyone who ever speaks in AA, anything you hear from them is a composite of their experience and their influences. And, my experience from a standpoint of me and alcohol is I'm a chronic, hopeless alcoholic who in the morning of October 19th of 1982, the power of God showed up in my life and separated me from alcohol. I don't have an experience of coming in and out of AA, and I don't have an experience of wanting to quit long before I quit. I don't even know if I wanted to quit that morning. My life was much like what the Big Book talked about, but I had been a daily drinker for almost 20 years. And I got separated from alcohol that morning by this power, and then was in terrible shape, unbeknownst to me, because I was very asleep. And I was 2 or 3 years. My first 2 or 3 years in AA were virtually a blackout from the damage I'd done to myself. I weighed about 260. I had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage, everything I owned, you stick in a duffel bag. And so that's the place I came from. And around 3 years in this program, and this is back to the influences that I've had, I met a man who was armed with this solution, who described what he used to be, and he's no longer that way. And he was kind enough at 3 years to pull me aside and ask me a question. He said, "Why do you think you're an alcoholic?" And I started telling him some stuff, and he said, "No, that has nothing to do with why you're an alcoholic." I wanted to tell him about all the things I did once I drank. He said, "That has nothing to do with it. You know, you go to jail." And he said, "Well, Mark, there's a lot of people that drink and never go to jail. That, you know, they're still alcoholics. You know, that has nothing to do with it. You know, well, I did this." And finally, I looked at him. I said, "Well, maybe I don't know why I'm an alcoholic. I mean, the kind of alcoholic I am, there's a part of me at that time is getting a little excited because maybe I'll find out I'm not and I'm in the wrong place, right?" That was not the case. And so he sat me down. I met with him once a week, and he sat me down, and we started in the title page of the Big Book, and we went through that book, and I had exactly what the Big Book says. I had a profound, revolutionary spiritual experience. I found out exactly what was wrong with me. And I worked with that man probably 3 or 4 years. He went on to be a world trustee, and then I'll tell you along the way what I did do, and some of you can relate to this if you got some time, is very subtly and slowly my ego, as it begins to rebuild and the world presents what it does, begin to slowly pull me out of AA. And I really reached a place where I wasn't working with people, and I'm getting concerned with worldly clamor. In about 10 years in this program, I was in as bad or worse shape than I was when I came to the program, dying of what I call untreated alcoholism. And I almost committed suicide. I was 24 hours away. And God, once again, does his own form of intervention. And I had a buddy. I hadn't heard from this guy in about 2 years, and out of the blue, he calls me. And then I get off the phone with him, and a half hour later, a guy shows up that I hadn't seen in another 2 years. Because the state that I was in, I hadn't been in an AA meeting for probably 6 months, and I was reduced to sitting in an apartment, and it wasn't where I wanted to be at 10 years of sobriety in my life. And I can't find it in the Big Book, but that's where I was at, and I put myself there. And then about 3 hours later, the same guy on the phone shows up in person, and he had sent a guy over, because he must have picked up on the phone that I was pretty clear about I was checking out of here, and he knew me a long. We had been pals for a long time. He knew my background, and this guy would not leave. He would not leave me alone. And three and a half, four hours go by, and then the first guy shows up, packs my bag, sticks me in a plane, and next thing I know, I wake up in Houston, Texas, in a nut house, at 10 years sober. And in that nut house, I really got into the Big Book, and again, and this time I really saw what I hadn't been doing. I saw that I never made the spiritual way of life on a daily basis part of my deal. Now, there were some other things that happened I didn't know about. There's a phenomenon called reconstruction of the ego. One of the contributors to AA, Dr. Harry Tebold, has talked a lot about that. I've had my own personal experience with it. I've worked with a lot of people that have had a lot of personal experience with it. The ego will come back, and that was a lot of what I experienced in that. But I hadn't been working with the disciplines of 10 and 11, and the more I got concerned with worldly clamor, then the less time I had to work with everybody, or anybody, shit, for that matter. And for the next 2 years, I worked and reworked the first 9 steps 4 times. And what that showed me is I had a lot of unwritten inventory, which means I had a lot of resentments, and I had a lot of fear, and I had a lot of unfinished amends, which means I'm violating my conscience on a daily basis. Because I'm not much different than you. Once you get sober, you start to remember what you put out into the universe. And what I can tell you since then, my life has really never been the same. My life took off from there. On a daily basis, I work with the strict spiritual disciplines of 10 and 11, and they're very strict, and I do exactly what they say, and it matters to me not whether anyone else does. You know, I start my day with pages 84 to 88. I have a daily meditation life. I meditate 2 times a day. Right now, my practice is 24 minutes. I do that every day, 7 days a week. And I do it because I like the effect produced by it. I do it because my big book says to do it. I do it because I didn't do it and went insane. So for those of you who got a little time and you're messing around a little with 10 to 11, you may learn a little here tonight. I don't know. But that was my experience. I work and rework the steps a minimum of 1 time a year. And again, I want to tell you why I do that. I do it for the effect produced by reworking the steps. And so what I want to share with you, I guess this month, is my experience with the steps and how I go back through that process. And I'm fixing to go back through the steps again. And keep in mind, when I talk about my going back through the steps and I'm talking about writing inventory, I'm not talking about old stuff. That's all been cleaned up. I'm talking about my current life today. Even working with the disciplines of 10 and 11, I still have this ego that still comes back, and so I still get to experience resentment, and I get to experience fear and selfishness and dishonesty and those kinds of things. So my inventories that I talk to you about are going to be, that's about current stuff. It's not old stuff. But what I do before, a couple other things. And again, this is where I come from. When I got sober, there was a group of us. You know, sometimes that'll happen. You sober up and you get a whole group of you and you start doing meetings and doing whatever. And there was about 25, 27 of us. Now, I'm a little over 18 years sober. That's not that long. But of that group, there's only 3 of us sober. To my knowledge, 9 or 10 now have died. I don't have a clue where the rest are. Now, recently, I got some literature from World Service. And, you know, AA's been around 60 plus years. And I believe the average length of sobriety in the world is 52 months. I mean, don't you have to think about that a minute? We've been around 60-plus years, and our average length of sobriety is 52 months. Something seems wrong with that picture. And you get these statistics all over about desire chips and how many are being sold and how many pick up one-year chips. And from what I can tell, the recovery rate seems to have gone down to somewhere between 6 to 10%. Versus, I believe my big book. I don't believe some of it, and but I believe all of it. And at one time, they talked about a 50 to 75% recovery rate. So I buried a lot of drunks over the years. So that's where I come from in terms of this. This is a fatal illness. You know, tonight I dedicate this talk to a pal of mine, Tony. Been around AA for 18 years. He's back in treatment now. He relapsed after 12 years a week ago Monday. Damn near drank himself to death in 7 days. And the good news, he didn't die and he's getting some help. That's a deadly thing. I've lost some dear, dear friends to alcoholism. One man, 14 years, picked up a drink, drank himself to death in 6 weeks. Another man, 7 years. Dear men, close men. I tell people, you know, living spiritual life in AA is difficult because you get close to people and people you love, and they drink, and a lot of them drink and they die. And you stay around long enough, and that's just the way it is. So how do I come at the steps? Well, there's a thing I call the step before the step. You know, there's a line in our big book that says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. So I think an important question, if you're new, how many of you have less than, say, 6 months? Raise your hands. Okay. Then if you're new, what we have, I think, would be an important question for you to ask. Well, what the hell do they have? It's a logical question, you know. And what we have is we have a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps. And everything else that we have in our life comes from that. Because without the spiritual awakening, I don't stay sober. So that's what we have. We've had a spiritual awakening. Now, the big book throughout, all the big book tells you a lot of other things that come along with that. It says that we have recovered and been given the power to help others. It says we have power, peace, happiness, a sense of direction. It says that we can cheerfully allow God to demonstrate his omnipotence when our ass is in trouble. All kinds of stuff. It says that we can match calamity with serenity. It's on and on with all the things that happen as a result of that spiritual awakening. But the truth is, that's what we have. We have a spiritual awakening. It says as a result of these steps. In my experience, is that means as a result of working the steps, not studying the steps, not pontificating about the steps, but working the steps as they're outlined in the book. Then there's another question there. Are you willing to go to any length? And, you know, if you're new, all you raised your hand 6 months or less, you're just like me. If anyone here walked up to you and said, are you willing to go to any length, you'll lie and say yes. And here's why. We don't tell you what that looks like. See? We don't explain to you what that is. So I'm going to explain to you what that is because, you know, when David... See, these are the kind of pals that God sends me, right? David today, I talked to him this evening. He was the most excited I've heard him in 2 months. You know why? He talks to a person today, and he gets a whole bunch of information about character assassination, slander going on about me, and he's happy. He's happy. He hears good shit, and he's sad. See, that's the kind of people I get. And then he tells me he's going to bring a whole bunch of pals. At the end of my talk, they're all going to stand up and holler bullshit. Now, this is a guy who likes me and loves me. What the hell do people in AA do who don't like you, right? God almighty. So let's go back to the question. Willing to go to any length? For all you, raise your hands. And so I ask myself this question every year before I go back to the work. Am I willing to do this? And really what it is I sit down and I take a look at these 12 steps on page 58. You know, we admit we're powerless over alcohol and our life's unmanageable. Am I willing to go through the pages in the big book where it talks about that, lay my experience alongside that, and once again, at 18 years sober, come to my truth about me in step one? Am I willing to do that? You know, am I willing to spend the 33 pages looking at the body? What happens to me when I take a drink? The 20 pages looking at the obsession of the mind. The pages that do with the unmanageability of my life at 18 years sober, not old, long time ago. Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to lay my experience alongside that today? Take the time to do that. To have the experience, see? Because what I know about the steps are not about answers. The steps are about an experience. You have an experience with step one. Second step, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I define sanity as truth and reality. I don't care how long you're sober. If you're like me, there's times that you're not experiencing truth and reality. Okay? I there's times in sobriety I've been sound asleep, dreaming I'm awake. And the reason I know that, all I have to do is look at some decisions and actions I took in my life. See? You don't have choice if you're asleep, dreaming you're awake. And I asked myself this thing about the second step. Am I willing to believe there's a power greater myself who will take me past here? What do I mean by here? Every one of us this evening, right now, at this time, has within them their life experience, all their knowledge about AA, their past, you name it. Is there more past here, past this place I'm in, all these belief systems that I have? Are there greater dimensions of joy and wonder and love, capacity to be of service? Am I willing to be open to that? Am I willing to have an open mind, lay aside everything I think I know about God and about the steps? Shit, I don't know. That's a tall order, you know. That's part of the second step. And there's another part to the second step. Do I want to do this again at 18 years? And that is, do I understand that I'm faced with a self-imposed crisis? Self-imposed crisis. Self-imposed. It doesn't come from out there. It's self-imposed. And that is lack of power. See, on my own power, I can't go past here. On my own power, I can't get rid of the belief systems that drive and dominate my life, that separate me from you, that still produce fear, resentment. I can't, on my own power. So am I willing in the second step to choose that God is everything in my life? Everything. Am I willing to do that? See, that's another tall order. Choosing God is going to be everything in your life. Am I willing to once again accept the fact that means that God will be everything? Who's in my life is no longer any of my business. You know, I have to laugh sometimes about people asking, you know, they'll say to me, well, why did you move to Dallas? I don't know what you all did when you did your third step decision, but my decision was I offer my life to thee to build with me and you do with me as you want. Where I live and what I do is no longer my business, hasn't been for many years. Once in a while, I still think it is. I got moved to Dallas. I didn't make a conscious choice. Yeah, I think I'll move from here to here. So am I willing to look at that again? And the second step over and over says, Mark, are you willing to seek, seek, seek? Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to commit seeking through the rest of the steps? Third step. Am I willing to once again make that decision? Am I willing to meet the requirement that any life based on self-will, drunk or sober, cannot or will not work? Period. Am I willing to do that at 18 years without a drink? Am I willing to do that today? And then the book gets into really what's the problem. Tonight I'm going to talk about step one, but my experience is, see, this is what the big book does. They wait till about somewhere around page 62 and 63 and tell you what's wrong with you, and it ain't alcohol. See, you walk around all the time, and if you knew, confused because nothing makes any sense. See, but they wait till they get on that page and they say, selfishness is your problem. And as a matter of fact, if you don't get rid of it, your ass is going to die. What? Yeah, if you don't get rid of this selfishness, you're going to die an alcoholic death because it'll drive you to drink. Damn, I thought my problem was alcohol. I thought that vodka that almost killed me. And you get this far along, and you know, am I willing to die the death of selfishness again? At that point, the book says, with God's help, Mark, you can be entirely rid of self. Am I willing to do that? Jesus, that's a tall order again. You know, am I willing to make that decision again about this relationship with this power? Power is going to direct my life, and I'm the actor and principal and agent, father, child, employer, employee. Do that incredible prayer, which is what? I'm going to offer myself to this power to do with me as he wants. Think about the implications of those words. Do with me as... You don't think they meant do with me as you want, do you? Yeah, that's my experience, is do with me as you want, you know? You guys are any different than me. Some night you're home, the last thing you want to do is a meeting. Next thing you know, you're driving down to a meeting. You had no choice in that decision. Do with me as you want. Go here. Work with this person. Do, you know? Jesus. You know, and inventory. I got to write three inventories again. Resentment inventory, four column. Fear inventory, sex inventory. Jesus, I'm tired of writing inventory. I don't know. I do. I don't know if I want to do that. You know, it's... And then I got to take all this stuff, and of course, those of you who got time can relate to this. Of course, if you're like me, at some point in time, you get this idea because you're a long time sober. All of a sudden, these defects are supposed to drift away, and you're supposed to become... I told a friend of mine one time... I somehow got the idea I'd be a spiritual mystic, and all I got was spiritual hemorrhoids out of that deal. You know, and so am I willing to do this again? Am I willing to bear my ass, if you will? And a fifth step, well, I don't know. I didn't like the one I did last time. You know, guy hurt my feelings. You know, he's no respect, just nothing, you know. And I don't know, you know, am I willing to do that? Yeah. And then the sixth step, you know, you got to look at all these defects that run rampant in your life because of this selfishness, because you're consumed with yourself. So your life is ran by defects. You go through, and you're willing to identify all those. And then one of the most insane questions only this group of people would ask, do I want God to remove them? See, we ask that question. There's some questions in that big book that normal people, if you ran them by them, they would, you know, the eyes and the mouth drops. You know, because I like to do that with normal people sometimes. I'll kind of give them a little... My mother used to be my best subject for this, but she'd just say, God, did I drop you in your head? You know? Because, I mean, you get to the sixth step. You've written this inventory. You've done a fifth step. And you got all these defects, right? Do I want to now let go of them? You know, it's, and we sit with that. Well, I'm not sure. I maybe I'll hang on to a few. You know, we just ask. I told a friend the other day, I looked at my experience. Most of us are above average intelligence with minimal common sense. see? As evidenced by the questions the big book asks us to consider, right? And then the seventh step, you know, I'm going to turn to this power. You know, I'm 18 years sober. I want to go to God in clean white robes, and I can't. You know, I got egg all over my face. And the seventh step, take all of me good and bad. I don't know if I want to do that shit or not. You know, and again, I'm trying to paint you what willing to go to any length is if you're new. So you have some idea what AA expects you to do. It's a hell of a lot more than just park your butt in a meeting. And then you get to this wonderful eighth step, where you get to make a list of all people that you've harmed as a result of your selfishness, and you got to go make amends to them. What do they mean by all? Well, let's see, money, got to pay all the money back. Got to be honest with the IRS, got to pay all the credit cards, mom and dad for all the money they gave you when you were drinking, and you lied to them about all the shit you needed, and your aunts and uncles and cousins, and Jesus, that's a bit much, don't you think? I just don't want to drink. Yeah, I know that, but you're going to drink if you don't do... do I want to do that? Jesus, I don't know. You know, and then the ninth step, I got to go do them. See, I got to go do them. I got to call people up. You know, 18 years sober, I got to call these people up. You know, I said, well, I need to set an appointment with you to make amends, you know. Sit across and, you know, last year I had about five of these. Sitting across from people, some of them long-term sober. And the amends was... Hell, two of these people, I didn't even know them. And I'd heard a bunch of shit, which is... One of the ways you get rid of defects is you get to practice them and then go make amends behind them. Never occurred to me to find out if any of this shit was true. And I go passing that shit on. So I sit down with these two guys and say, well, I'm making amends to you because what I did was assassinate the shit out of your character. You know, and I'll tell you what, I learned a lesson. You know what one of them had me do to clean it up? He said, I would like you to go to all the people that you told and tell them that was horse shit. That'll cure your ass of gossip. Because I come from the school, I won't stay sober unless I do it. This is what he told me to do. So I did that. 17 more people I have to approach that I could remember. Do I want to do this again this year? I'm not sure. Sometimes gossip is fun, you know, shit. And then in the 10th step, you know, there's two pages in the 10th step, and the 10th step is about the line of the will from the time I walk out of my house till I come back at night. Do I want to practice all these things they tell me in the 10th step? You know, do I want to grow an understanding of effectiveness? Do I want to go through my day? Do I want to watch? Do I want to ask? Do I want to turn? Do I want to cease fighting anything or anybody? You know, do I want to understand I've been placed in a position of neutrality? Do I want to ask myself every single day, what's the vision of God's will for me today in every area of my life? You know, do I want to go through the day along the line of His will, not mine? Do I want to practice using my new sixth sense, which is that I'm a spiritual being? Jesus, I don't know. Sometimes it's easier just to go through the day being asleep, running on self-will. I don't know if I want to do that again, you know. And then the 11th step, you know, upon awakening, I'm going to say all these prayers. And then my book is very clear to me that I then have to sit in the silence and meditation. By the way, my book doesn't say it's an option. I don't know. Sometimes when I'm not in meditation and I get real self-will bound, that's kind of fun. I don't know. You know, see, I've had a meditation practice for several years, but I can assure you on any given day, some of you can relate to this. I'll ask this question, maybe some of you. Have you ever finished your prayers or meditation, whatever, and this voice says this to you? Mark, what if all this is just a crock of shit? Have you ever had that happen? Am I the only one that's ever happened to? What if all this, and of course, there's enough of me restored to sanity that says, well, even if it is, the quality of your life's better than it's ever been, so who cares, right? But, you know, am I willing to do that? See, am I willing to continue with those practices? Sitting two times a day for 24 minutes, which is my practice, that takes time. You know, my ego's got other stuff to do. We like watching TV, you know. Do I want to sit in the... Man, I don't know. Then the 12th step. Oh, man. Two parts, you know. You get to work with people like David. See, do you want to keep working with the Davids, you know? See, I'll tell you something. Last year I went back to the steps, and I'll tell you one of the things that happened. I've got a, every Tuesday night now, I got a commitment. I'm down at the 24-hour club. And I'm a smoker, and this smoke drives me out of this room I'm in. We're jam-packed, and every other Tuesday, some guy goes into ETs and seizures, and that's where I am every Tuesday night for an hour and a half. You know? Unbelievable. Do I want to do that? You know, do I want to do that again? Do I want to keep taking people through the work? Because it takes time. Those of you that sponsor people know what I mean. When I work with people, for the most part, I normally meet with them a minimum once every 2 weeks for anywhere from 1 to 4 hours as we continue through these steps. And right now I'm working with 5 guys. And in addition to that, I'm not independently wealthy. I work for a living, so I have a full-time job as well. Do I want to do that again? You know, I don't know. I don't know, because it takes time. Those of you who work with people know what I mean. Working with others, it means working with others. See? Because I the kind of sponsorship I have is very, very involved. It's not, and anyone I've worked with will tell you, I'm not a guy that I don't want you calling me every night. That isn't how I work. We sit down and we go through the big book together. That's exactly how we do it. And that takes time. And then, so it's like, well, geez, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I want to do that. So that's what Willing to Go to A-Link is. For those of you, raised your hand 6 months or less. So when someone asks me if I'm willing to work with them, I go through just like I did with you. And then I say, I want you to take a couple days and I want you to see if this is what you want to do. See? Now, I didn't used to do this, and you've had this happen. You get to working with people and you get them up to the first 3 steps. They do the prayer and they're faster than a speeding bullet. They're gone. Or they'll get to amends and they're gone. And, you know, you take a lot of time doing that. And finally, one time I was talking to a man called Big Frank up in Denver, long time sober. And he asked me, he said, what do you do when someone approaches you about, would you like, you know, sponsorship? So I told him. So he took me into the big book in that chapter in working with others. He said, there's a couple other things you need to do. And I learned a valuable lesson. So that's what I do. Now, I can tell you what my experience is. Of about 10 people who asked me to take them through the work, at best, 2 call me back. They're people like David. See? Never the ones I want to work with. See, they're just like me. Self-will, the bone, selfish, self-seeking, resentful, arrogant, defiant, got a lot of answers. They're just like me, because that's who you wind up with, don't you? See, you get to sponsor your alter ego. So that's what I do, and I let them sit with that. Do you want to do this? And I trust me, a lot of people don't. Because the deal is, see, if we want to get sober, based on my experience and what this book says, that's what I've got to be willing to do. And I don't want someone to waste my time, and I'm not going to waste theirs if they're unwilling to do that. So then the next step is, of course, they call back and say, yes, I want to go through the big book, through the steps. Okay. So then we sit down, and we begin with the title page of the big book. And I begin with the title page, because that's what was done with me. If you think about this, you will transmit what you have. You cannot transmit what you do not have. So when I work with others, I transmit to them how I was worked with. And the way I was worked with, we started in the title page, where the man, when I was in this program 3 years, took the title page and explained the circle and triangle, and I realized I wasn't in AA. Because, you know, you've got the circle and the triangle, and it used to be in our book. It's not, but there's 3 parts to it, called the 3 legacies, and they were given to us in a specific order. Recovery was given to us first. And recovery is found in the first 164 pages of the big book, plus the doctor's opinion. What recovery does, what going through the steps does, big book says in doctor's opinion, we got to have a psychic change. Because it's my mind that takes me back to a drink. It's my mind that has my selfishness going on. So recovery is going to treat my mind. I'm going to get restored to sanity, not only around alcohol, but in many other areas of my life. That happens as a result of working the steps, going through the precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. So that's the recovery portion. That's what that looks like. And then the unity is about the fellowship. I'm going to take my body, to the fellowship. And service is about, by the time you get to the 10th step, it says you've entered the world of the Spirit. You take your awakened spirit out to be a service to God and your fellow human beings in every single area of your life. Now I have a threefold illness and I have a threefold program to treat all parts. But here's what's happened to me before. And some of you can maybe relate. When I met this man and he explained this process to me, what I came to find out about myself was I was in one-third of a three-part program expecting the results of the other two. Meaning, I was going to meetings every day. And in my first 3 years in AA, I think the most I ever got up to was the fifth step. At the very most. Because I worked with two men who didn't work out of the big book. That's another thing if you're new. Don't ever let anyone read your big book for you. You know, I hear a lot, you know, my sponsor says, well, what's the book say? See, I transmit what was given to me. This man made it very clear to me that he can't keep himself sober, let alone me. That I'm going to have to get a relationship with God and that my solution's in the big book. So every time I'd call him, well, I learned to lie because his first question, well, did you pray? So if I said no, he'd hang up. So after a while, if I had not lied, I'd say yes. And then he'd open the book up. What was he doing with me? You see what he did? I mean, he didn't do this occasionally. We're talking every time. Any problem I had. Well, what did he teach me? Any problem my mind convinces me I have, the solution's found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But he wouldn't allow me to develop any kind of a dependency on him. But my truth was that 3 years in this program, I'm in one-third of a program expecting the results of the other two. I had never... See, and I was confused at 3 years. Here's why. I came into AA with the duffel bag damn near dead. And in 3 years, I'd bought my first home. I have two cars sitting in a garage. I'd bought some mountain property. Little wifey poo. And I'm sitting in this house one night feeling like a prisoner of war and a drink looked real good. And I could not figure out why. I could not figure out why. I'm earning at that time more money than I'd ever earned. And I could not understand why. Well, the reason is I'm sitting there at 3 years with the same mind I had when I came to AA. Nothing, very little had changed. It's like that old saying, you get a drunken horse thief and sobering up, all they do is steal better horses. See? But they still steal horses. See? So that's where I'm at it. And when this guy explained this circle and the triangle, lights started going off in my head. He said, Mark, this is why you're experiencing what you're experiencing. He said, you've never had a psychic change. You've never had the spiritual awakening as described in the big book. And the reason I know that is because you're telling me what's going on with you. Not your external life, Mark, but your internal life. And I said, my God. You know, of course, at that time, if you're like me, you know, I say to him, well, where'd you hear all this shit? You know, I've never, you know, well, it's in the book. You know, it's, oh, okay. So I always start with the circle and the triangle. And to this day, the circle and triangle are very important. I sit down with four people about every other weekend, and we do a thing called Steel on Steel. One of the things we do is we locate ourselves in that circle and triangle. I talk about my home group, how many meetings I've gone to. I talk about exactly where I'm at with the steps, what I do with the disciplines of 10, 11, and I talk about what I'm doing to be of service. That circle and triangle has had a major impact on me since that point in time, and I call that being located. Because let me tell you something about the ego, how it operates based on my experience. I used to sell television sets many, many years ago, and you'd sell someone a new set, and the picture looks beautiful. And that person has that set for 5 years, and over 5 years, the quality of that picture diminishes at such a minute level that they can't see it. 5 years go by. If I walked into their house, I would say, that picture looks like shit. They don't even know it. Well, that's exactly the same way your ego will pull you out of AA and spiritual living. And so locating myself is a way that I ensure that doesn't happen to me anymore. Because I'm very accountable with two or three other people in this circle and triangle about how many meetings I'm going to, where am I in with sponsorship, where am I at in working the steps, where am I at with the disciplines of 10 and 11. So that's been an important part for me. Now, once I'm done doing that, we look at the table of contents, and then we're going to really begin looking at step one. I had powerless over alcohol. We're going to look at it in two ways. We're going to look at it physically. What happens to me when I take a drink? 10 pages in the doctor's opinion, and the first 23 pages of the big book are really devoted to you and I. See, this is this thing again about this book and who it's written for. There are 33 pages designed for you and I to lay our experience alongside and answer one question. Mark, when you took a drink, did you lose control? 33 pages to answer that. That's what the first 33 pages are about, the doctor's opinion, to answer one little question. Based on your experience, when you took a drink, did you lose control? And so I'm going to go back into my experience, and I'm going to look at that. Because that becomes the issue. See, the issue is control. When I took a drink, I took my first drink when I was 16, my last drink when I was 36, and I go back, and I remember, you know. Remember the time I get on a plane in Anchorage, Alaska, and I got 3 days to get to Iowa to a funeral. 6 days later, I wake up in St. Louis, Missouri. I remember the time I'm living with a gal. I go to the grocery store to get milk. 8 days later, I come out of a blackout in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, 800 miles away. I don't have a clue how I get there. I look at the times that I take a drink and I don't show up to places I'm supposed to be. I don't show up to funerals, weddings, one time my own. You see, I go back and I remember. See? And I touch that again. You see, every time I go back through, I touch this again. The phenomenon of craving, my capacity to have the drink take me where it wants, was taking place within 2 years of me taking a drink, by the time I was 18 years old. Because I've looked at this over and over. Trust me, every time through the steps, I come at the steps a little bit different. I don't go into the steps with an answer, meaning I don't go into the steps assuming I'm an alcoholic. I take the path of consideration, which is maybe I'm not. The past 18 years. And I can slide my ass right on out of here. Maybe I'm not, see? To find out what? That I am. And in the process of working with those first 33 pages, slowly, using meditation, turning statements into questions, laying my experience, I get convinced of the God-awful truth that from almost the first time I took a drink, I broke out in a phenomenon called craving, and I lost control. And the book hammers home something else. It says, it's real nice you haven't had a drink in 18 years, but here's the deal, buddy. If you did, you will be worse than when you quit drinking 18 years ago, because the physical part of this illness, even if you're not drinking, is getting worse, not better. That's why people with long-term sobriety pick up a drink. A lot of them drink themselves to death, and they do it very quickly. They have to drink 24/7. It's not an option. See? I look at my pal that had 12 years that picked up a drink. Took him nine days. Blood alcohol when he checked into the hospital was 0.46. 44 years old, 12 years, he picked up a drink. 9 days, he was damn near drinking himself to death. That's me, see? And I look at those 33 pages. At 18 years sober, I look at it. See, I got to tell you something about me and whiskey. Whiskey is not an old memory to me. Whiskey is not an old memory to me. It's very current. It is very current. Then I got to look at the other thing, the thing called, and the big book, by the way, at this time talks about two kinds of drinkers and then us. And the first they talk about is like a moderate drinker. And I lay my experience along, and they give the criteria of a moderate drinker. It says, this man or woman can take it or leave it alone. So I go into my experience and say, could you take it or leave it alone? No, I always took it. So I'm not moderate, so I X that one out. Now my heart starts to accelerate a little on the next one because he's called a hard drinker. And he looks just like an alcoholic. And I always start to get a little excited here. See, it says a hard drinker had a habit. Do you have a habit? Mm-hmm. The hard drinker, their physical and mental health gets impaired. Did yours? Yep. And then it said, matter of fact, to the hard drinker, they may even die a few years before their time. Yeah, that could have happened to me. Yeah. And then there's this one little sentence. But it said, here's the deal with a hard drinker. If you give them a sufficient reason, and they list four in there, and you could add to it, here's what those SOBs do. They stop, they stay stopped, or moderate. So I say to myself, self, did you have sufficient reason? Yeah, about 900 of them. Were you able to stop? Yes, many times. Could you stay stopped? Nope. Could you control? Nope. X, I'm not the hard drinker. So what am I left with? The real alcoholic. I'm left with being a real alcoholic based on my experience. 18 years sober, touching this thing again. Touching what in God's name would happen to me if I took a drink. See? And the whole issue at this point in time for the real alcoholic, ladies and gentlemen, has never had anything to do with how much you drink and how often you drink. The issue is control. Plain and simple. Because the book goes on to say that a lot of us will come to AA, we never even looked like hard drinkers, but the issue is control. And then I'm faced with the God-awful truth. And then on pages 23 to 43, I look at this thing called an obsession of the mind. I was in AA for 3 years, and until I worked with this man, I did not understand what it meant to be mentally powerless over alcohol. See, if you're new, you know, you hear a lot of talk about drinking, and I don't know why, but somehow being mentally powerless to me had something to do with drinking. What I never understood for the longest time is mentally powerless happens to all of us in the state we're in tonight, which is hopefully we're all sober. And pages 23 to 43 make me go back and look at something. They make me go back and look at when I have no alcohol in my body, do I have a mind that takes me back to a drink whether I want to or not? Well, I don't know. So you go into your experience, and they tell me some stuff in there about, you know, back to the requirement to be a member of AA is that I have a desire to quit drinking, right? Well, my book says more at some point in time, you reach a point where the most powerful desire to stop is of no avail. Now, ain't that a bitch? The only requirement to be a member has nothing to do with keeping me sober. Now, I'll give you something to think about. This will amp you up a little. The only time I ever had a desire to quit drinking was when I was drinking. I haven't had that since I got sober. So I don't belong in AA anymore because I don't have a desire to quit drinking because I ain't drinking. Isn't that your experience? When I'm drinking, I have a desire to quit. Since God removed that from me, I haven't had a desire to quit because I'm not drinking. Paradoxical stuff. Don't worry about it. But and then there's this pair of squiggly lines. The man who carried the message to me said, every word's important. But when you see squiggly lines, pretend it's a neon sign. So you got this paragraph in squiggly lines. And it says, you know, we really don't know why this is, but sober, you lost the power of choice in drink. What? Yeah, sober, you lost the power of choice in drink. See, I don't know about you, but I would have periods of time where I didn't have alcohol in my body. And probably 10 years before I got sober, I had a lot of reasons why I should never put alcohol in my body again. Like one of the things I love to do is drink and drive. Or drink and get on airplanes. Or drink and not show up to work. Or drink and take all the rent money and I did that kind of stuff, and that was going on probably 10 plus years. And then I'd have periods of time where I wouldn't have alcohol in my body. And I somehow had the insane idea I was involved in the choice about picking up a drink again. See? If you go into your experience and your experience is like mine, if you suffered a lot of the consequences that come from a lot of drinking, and then if you get alcohol out of your system for 3 to 5 days, that's about all it takes. If your mind took you back to alcohol, if you're like me, I want you to consider you have no say in that. For the longest time, I actually thought I had a say and I would be separated from alcohol maybe 10 days. Like, you know, there was one wife, she left. Okay, I'm going to sober. Well, actually, what she said was, if you don't get sober, I'm leaving. Well, we'll take a look. Okay, firm resolution. No, I'll never. 9 days, I'm going to make a trip to Aspen, Colorado. And I remember leaving in the morning, and I vaguely remember going into a liquor store and ordering a six-pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon. And 3 days later, I wake up in a hotel with a woman in Carbondale, Colorado. And I actually thought I had something to do with the choice in that after being sober for 9 days. And this, pages 23 to 43, by the way, this won't feel good. In pages 23 to 43, here's what you start to understand. If you drank like I did, if you have my experience, I can give you every reason in the world why a guy like me should never take a drink again. And I can come up with all the firm convictions in the world. And the horrible thing for me is I'll take a drink again on my power. And there's nothing I can do about it. Absolutely nothing I can do about it. And the book goes on and tells me why. For the longest time in AA, again, I'm above average intelligence, minimal common sense, so the why question is always important, right? So like, okay, why? Why am I sober? Why aren't I involved in that choice? Well, because choice comes from willpower, and your problem is there'll come times when your willpower is not available to you, therefore you have no choice. Oh, shit. It's called a strange mental blank spot, Mark. Because, you know, you've all heard this. Think through the drink. You ever heard that? There's no thought in the strange mental blank spot. There's nothing to think through because you're not present. See? You can't have choice if will isn't present. And the big book says to me, here's why, Mark. Here's why you go back to a drink. Because your will is not present. If your will is not present, all these consequences, that wife, jail, your physical health, they're unavailable to deter you from taking the drink. Whoa. That sounds serious. That's because it is. You know, I sponsored two or three men that were looking a long time in the penitentiary. They picked up a drink again. Wouldn't do this work and picked up a drink again. They somehow thought they were involved with choice. And those 20 pages, always, every time, will damn near move you to tears. And the reason they damn near move me to tears every time is this. There's only one reason a guy like me is standing up here sober and not had a drink of alcohol in a little over 18 years. And it ain't got shit to do with me. It's got a lot to do with this loving God. You see? You know, you hear sometimes, you know, all the cute phrases we hear in AA. If I've had a spiritual awakening, I have the power to do these things. If you're new, you don't. Here's what I mean. Don't put the plug in the jug. If you're new, you're like me. You'll pull it out. You can't put it in. If you've had a spiritual awakening, you got the power to not put the plug in the jug. Right? Just don't drink and go to meetings, even if your ass falls off. If you've had a spiritual awakening, you can do that. If you're new, you can't. You follow me? That was my experience. See, all those cute one-liners that I kept hearing in AA, which didn't work for me because I had never done the steps, they won't work for new people. See, because they don't have power, because they haven't had a psyche change. They're sitting there with the same mind, which is why, by the way, you will not hear those words come from me. I can't reconcile them with my book, and they're not in the book. And they apply to people that have power. Imagine telling some guy, like some of the guys I get to sponsor, just don't drink, no matter what. And the guy looks me dead in the eye and says, Mark, no matter what, I drink. That won't work for me, Mark. See? Just don't drink, even your ass falls. Mark, my ass even hints of falling off. I go drink. That's what treats my butt falling. So I touch this thing again. You know, that I've lost the power of choice. That I have no, it says there'll come a time I have no effective mental defense against the first drink. And I'm very clear what an effective mental defense is. It's one that works every time. And I begin to see that I don't have it. Now here's where you and I roll the dice. Whether you got time or whether you knew. And this is therein lies my dilemma. Here's what the problem is. The book says, at certain times I have no effective mental defense. You know what my problem is? I'm so damn arrogant, I think I know what the time looks like. You see? See, because there's a lot of times, since I've been sober, and any of you have been sober, you've had this happen. You know, you go in the grocery store, you're kind of asleep, and you wake up and you're surrounded by the alcohol aisle. You're trapped. Everywhere you spin and turn. Right? And your head says, like mine, it'd be nice to buy about 50 gallons of this shit, right? Because you've been sober for a while, you don't delude yourself with two drinks anymore, do you? 50 gallons, back to semi, you bet. And then you kind of laugh to yourself, you know, and, well, I got to go to my meeting, and, you know. And you do that, you pull that shit off a few times. But the book says at certain times you'll have no effective mental defense against the first drink. And when I say I'm rolling the dice, what I did for many years in AA as a result of not working with the disciplines of 10-11, I rolled dice. Because if I'm not in fit spiritual condition every single day and the book's very clear to me how to do it, I'm rolling dice because that may be the day when I'm in a strange mental blank spot. And I can't find anything in my book that guarantees me length of time away from a drink that brings anything to the table. What comes to the table is fit spiritual condition. Damn. So once more, Mark, at certain times, has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Mark's defense must come from a power greater than himself. See, knowing God, experiencing God, was not an option for me. It may be for some of you. It was not for me. I'm Norwegian alcoholic, but I'm not an idiot. When I go through the book and I lay my experience alongside of it, I get real interested about knowing God. And I'm no longer going to debate with you about God. It makes no difference to me what you call it, what you believe. It makes no difference. I just need to experience the power of God in my life. Because I see what's going to happen if I do not. I am going to drink. I am going to drink. See, I came into AA an atheist. I was raised a Methodist, became a Catholic. There was this cute little girl that said, if you want what I have, you've got to become a Catholic. I said, I'll do it. This is the kind of people we are. I spent a year taking instructions, for God's sakes, right? Almost puked at the aisle. It was amazing. Then between Vietnam and a bunch of other experiences, I came into AA, and I was an atheist. You know, you got my first couple years in AA, it wasn't fun to be. You know, guys all hooking hands and hugging. And, Jesus, ain't that shit cute, you know? I did not join your circles. I did not, you know. I just didn't. But then I started to wake up, and you know, you start to wake up a little bit and those kinds of things, and this man took me through. But I had to have an experience with God, and I want to stress the word experience. See, I'm not in AA because I believed alcohol would work for me. I drank that shit for 20 years, and I love the effect produced by alcohol. And what I knew is, once I saw the first half of the first step, and I saw this was me, I knew that believing in God had nothing to do with what was going to happen to me. I knew I needed to experience the power of God in my life. And that had nothing to do with belief. Nothing to do with belief. And I got open-minded. Step one will get you very open-minded, right? If you've been sober for a while and suffering from untreated alcoholism, that'll get you open-minded too. Just being dry, coming to your meetings, sharing, a little happy, joyous, and free, a little sunbeam for Jesus right now. The ego's got you trapped in this deal, see? You've been sober for a while, you're supposed to be happy, joyous, and free all the time, you know, yeah. I tell this people, I've always shared my human condition. I don't run around Alcoholics Anonymous telling you at 18 years that my life is perfect all the time. It's not. Sometimes I'm in stark terror. Why? Because that's the human condition. You know? Sometimes I some of these elders, I chat to them and I say to them, I don't even think you have to go to the bathroom anymore. You're so evolved. You know, see, they come to meetings and all you hear is the, and in my experience is that's just not reality, you know. I go into meetings someday and that person 30 days sober, that day is going to save my ass because I got more wild shit going on up here, the chatter of a thousand monkeys and trapped in my own self-will and you name it. And because that's my experience. You know, I think I'll tell you when that's going to stop, when my spirit leaves this body. It's probably when that's going to stop. I don't ever see myself not having the human experience, but... You know, we've only talked about the first half of step one, the unmanageability of my life. 53 pages to ask ourselves two little questions. This is how smart we are. 53 pages, and they're summed up in one sentence on page 44. See the book, it just pisses you off sometimes. Why didn't they just take me to the one sentence? No, they got it 53 pages. And here's what it is. They summarize the first 53 pages in one sentence, so I lay my experience. It says, if when you wanted to quit entirely, have you ever wanted to do that? Yeah. Could you pull it off? Nope. Okay. And if when drinking you lost control, yeah, that's me. Well, you're probably an alcoholic, and only spiritual experience is going to save your life. Oh, my God. See? But... 53 pages, and then one little sentence, they condense it all. Okay? And they use the word only. See, they don't say it's an option. Only a spiritual experience will save your ass. Well, I don't know if I like that. We don't care. You have no other option. only. See, it's not a choice at that point in time. See, again, the book, you know, by then you see you got your leg between your tails and you know you're going to die of alcohol. Where are you going to go? See? They keep pulling you in. See? The unmanageability of my life, I like to use page 52 as a criteria. You can see if some of you might be able to relate. You can tell if your self-will or selfishness is operational if you have some of this stuff going on. Because this is an external manifestation of this. Are you having trouble in personal relationships? Of course, we like to follow that. Well, what do you mean? Well, I mean, how is it at home? How is it at group? How is it at work? How is it with your mother? How is it with, you know, how is it in personal relationships, you know? Or do you ever do that thing? You walk into a meeting like this and it's packed and everyone's smiling and having fun and you're alone. That screen comes down and you're separate, you know, terrified. But then there's more that says, do you have trouble controlling your emotional nature? What do you mean by that? A guy cuts you off in traffic, you follow him 19 miles. You know? I'm in a meeting one time in San Antonio. I'll tell you what this guy did. He did. He followed a guy for a long time, got out, took a can, and burned the guy's car down. He was having trouble with his emotional nature. And he goes on to say that, are you afraid of misery and depression? What do you mean? You know. Are you satisfied with your life today? Are you full of fear? Do you feel useless? Are you unhappy? Jesus, do I have to answer these? You know? Are you restless, irritable, and discontent? Okay. And those are all symptoms of your selfishness, your self-will. If that's what your experience is, if that's what you lay aside, and I've yet to go back through the steps where I can't touch some of that, where I can't still see some areas of self-will. Some people I work with today were very clear. They informed me that I had some areas of self-will going on. Guy said, you hurt my feelings, you know. It's just, see, and I don't do that intentionally, neither do you. But that becomes the essence of my step one experience. The big book spends about, just right about 63, 64 pages, which is one third of the big book almost, having you and I take a look at the first step. Why would they spend so much? Because this is my experience. If you don't touch what's wrong with you, if you don't touch this deadly illness, if you don't touch your need for power, you won't do 2 through 12. You won't do what this program asks you. You absolutely will not. Why? Because 2 through 12 are acts against the will. And we're self-will run riot. It is my first step experience that becomes the foundation of the spiritual arts through which I walk, a free man and a free woman. It is my first step experience that still has me showing up at places like the 24-hour club and here and sponsoring people and going back through the steps and making amends. It is always my first step. I am very, very current with me in a glass of alcohol. That is the foundation. See, the men and women in this program who I admire, who have some things that I want, who are a long time sober, continually do the same thing that I'm talking about. They resubmit a minimum once a year to these first 9 steps. They're very current with their first step experience. They never get taken away from the first step experience. The end result is all of them have home groups, all of them go to meetings, all of them do stuff like this, all of them sponsor people, all of them work with the disciplines of 10 and 11. My experience is if you get moved away from your first step experience, worldly clamor will pull you right out of here, which is probably why our book spends one-third of its time devoted to you and I asking ourselves, is this me? Am I a real alcoholic? Has that been my experience? Next week, we'll move forward. Thank you all.